I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with Cecilia Lee, Managing Director for Persistence Plus, a program that supports students to help them navigate the path to graduation and increase college completion. It's a platform that gives students a nudge to staying on task and working their way to graduation. Then it's my segment on jobs you don't always think about. And today's job, I had never heard of. In my conversation with athlete BJ Jones, we'll learn what a Spartan is and details of the sport. On today's show, it's two topics I was not familiar with at all. My conversation with Cecilia Lee and BJ Jones is coming up next, right after the NPR newscast. Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Cecilia Lee. She's Managing Director for Persistence Plus, which is something I've never heard of. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lillian. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Let's begin with what is Persistence Plus and how does it work?
Sure. So Persistence Plus supports students with behavioral nudges to help them navigate the path to graduation and increase college completion at scale. And so our intelligent software platform is engaging tens of thousands of college students over text message and personalizes nudges to students based on their specific experiences and challenges. The problem that we're addressing is that a college credential is more important than ever to economic mobility, and yet half of students who enroll at a two-year college will no longer be there a year later, and only 37% earned any kind of credential within 6 years. Students need support not only with academic and financial issues, but also with what we call psychosocial challenges. So feeling disconnected and anxious, or being overwhelmed with managing college along with a job and raising kids, or feeling like no one has given them the roadmap to college and they don't know how to ask for help.
Obviously, it sounds very much needed in our society today. I was just wondering, where did it come from? Who created it? They could answer the call to make it better for students.
Persistence Plus was co-founded by Jill Frankfurt, our president, and Kenny Salim. And Jill and I both previously worked at Jobs for the Future, a national policy organization that works at scale across the nation in order to improve economic opportunity. And I think there, you know, what we saw was that solutions for increasing college completion really need to work at scale and be able to impact, you know, many students and be something that can grow outside of boutique programs and also be a solution that is targeted toward the most underrepresented. We really approached it toward designing a solution that was going to be benefiting low-income students, first-generation students, students who are underrepresented in college and who really need this kind of support.
Tell me the crux of it.
So we know that small nudges can result in big changes in people's behavior. And so nudges have been effective in many areas of public policy, from increasing voter turnout to helping people get a flu shot to helping workers save more for retirement. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One way that our nudges translate this idea to the college context is by establishing social norms around seeking help on campus. Students often fear that going to tutoring or otherwise asking for help is going to be seen as a sign of weakness or telegraph that they don't belong. And so nudges help them know that this is just what successful students do and a normal and expected part of the college experience.
Can you walk me through an example of what a text might be and how it goes back and forth?
Oftentimes, students come to the college with the mistaken impression that tutoring is something for struggling students.
Sure.
And, you know, a nudge can kind of dispel that perception by saying something like, most students use the tutoring center, or that students who get A's and B's use the tutoring center. One idea behind nudging is that it's not coercive. It's not like you have to go to the tutoring center. And it's more than just a reminder. It's more than just saying, well, tutoring is available and it's here in this place. It's a way of sort of sending the message that this is what students do in college, and it's just an expected part of the experience.
So literally, someone from your business will send a text to a student that is in the program and say...
So a nudge to a student might say, you know, what's your study goal for this week? A student might say, you know, I plan to study for my biology test. Then the messages might walk them through where exactly, when and where do you plan to do that. They say at the library on Wednesday after my class. And then on Wednesday, they would actually get a follow-up message letting them know in their own words, you made this goal. You're going to implement your goal by studying on Wednesday at the library. And how's it going? I had some student stories ready to share.
Go ahead and share one.
So we often find that students sometimes feel comfortable talking to our platform over text in a way that they may not interact with a person. So for instance, we know that so many college students are struggling to meet their basic needs, food, housing, transportation, and that these challenges can also oftentimes come with a feeling of stigma. And so one of our students at Riverside City College responded over text that transportation issues were preventing her from getting to class, and through a nudge that is really designed to help and encourage students to access campus resources, we were able to connect her with the right support that was able to provide her emergency funds to buy new tires.
Well, that's so simple, too, when you think about it. You empowered her with information, and that allowed her to overcome her challenge. That's awesome. My guest is Cecilia Lee. She's the managing director for Persistence Plus. So what is the research behind this, and what have been some of the anecdotal responses?
I'm excited to say that we've seen results in multiple gold standard studies. In one randomized controlled trial with three community colleges, we found that these nudges actually increased persistence to a second year by 10 percentage points. 72% of students who got our nudges returned for the fall, compared to just 62% of students who were randomly chosen not to get the nudges. And, you know, that's a big increase in the community college world, where it's challenging to move retention even a couple of percentage points.
What students qualify to be included in the program? How does a student become one of the students that gets the text messages?
We work with the college partner in order to identify the students that the college wants to support.
Okay.
And, you know, that can be anything from particular populations, for example, foster youth or first-generation students, to supporting the entire first-year class at the college.
So the school identifies that, and you work with the school to then, they may give you a list of names that fall into this category with the foster youth or first-time college students.
Yes.
And then you get a list of names, and it's going into a database, and then automatically these messages will start.
Yeah, and we create personalized student profiles based on who the student is. So,
okay.
You know, a first-generation student might get advice from another first-generation student, or, you know, someone who is 38 and returning adult worker coming back to college, you know, might get somewhat different messaging than a student who is 18 and a first-time student. And so, you know, it's personalized for who the student is, as well as what the student is saying on the platform.
And how many messages might they get, either in a day or in a week? And would it vary between the beginning of the semester and the end of the semester?
Yeah, the students get a couple of messages a week, and it varies, you know, depending on how often they respond and how they respond. While they would get the support throughout their semester, they do get different messaging at certain times in the semester or year. And so there are certain nudges that are pegged to important milestones or deadlines, such as renewing their financial aid or meeting with an advisor to plan out their academic roadmap before registration for classes open. You know, we know from our data that, like, later in the term and just before finals is a time of very high stress for students, and so there might be messages or nudges that go out that seek to alleviate that.
And how is this different from, you know, if I were to text my daughter, don't forget to study for your final tomorrow, or, you know, how does it work differently than...
It's funny because some of our partners and supporters have catched it that way, that this is the nagging mom for every student. We really are excited about the ability to use this technology and these strategies to support thousands of students at once in personalized ways. Importantly, to support those students who may not have that voice over their shoulder or that support from somebody who knows the ins and outs of college.
How are you funded, and who are some of your clients here in the Inland Empire schools that are participating in this nudging program?
Well, we partner in several different ways. We have some direct partnerships with colleges. We have a number of grant-funded initiatives that are focused on certain populations and goals. Here in the Inland Empire, we are focused on foster youth. So we are partnering with Foster Care Count, which is an early supporter that funded our work with foster youth to nudge foster youth statewide to college completion. And so we started this work at UC Riverside. We expanded to all three community colleges in Riverside, so Riverside City College, Moreno Valley, Norco, and we're also now serving foster youth at colleges throughout California.
Nice. So it seems like the foster youth might benefit very much from this type of program.
That's how we see it. And our initial supporter of this work, Winnie Wexler with Foster Care Counts, you know, said it in exactly that way, that the challenges that we seek to address with all college students are really those that are magnified for foster youth, who are just so capable and ambitious, but who have single-digit rates of college completion and, you know, may not have someone in their lives who has experience with college or can support them or let them know, you know, these are sort of the keys to success.
I think you answered my question, but you might be grant funded or the colleges themselves. You're a client of the college, and as a partnership, you're providing the service, but the college might be funding it through a grant or however. Is that correct?
That's right. So in this particular case, we are serving the students at a number of colleges funded by Foster Care Counts as well as John Burton Advocates for Youth.
My guest has been Cecilia Lee. She's the managing director for Persistence Plus, a very unique type of business that's helping our students in community colleges.
Thank you, Lillian. I appreciate it. This has been a pleasure.
To learn more about Persistence Plus, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the link for today's show. My next segment is part of an ongoing series. It's titled, Jobs You Don't Always Think About. So far, I've talked with an expert on becoming a Major League Baseball umpire, a pyrotechnician, and a voiceover artist. But today, the job we'll learn about is that of a Spartan. There's a lot of jobs out there. Your job, I've never even heard of. So my guest is Vijay Jones. He's a Spartan athlete, is what I'm calling you. You're a Spartan Race Pro team member. What is a Spartan?
A Spartan is a very versatile athlete. We compete in Spartan races across the country, which is a kind of obstacle race, the premier obstacle race in the world at this time. So, yeah, so what we do is we run anywhere from 3 to 15 miles in the mountains or in the city, and we go over obstacles while doing it. And that's pretty much what we're about.
Okay, well, I'm going to break it down just a little bit more. Tell me, what's the competition consist of, and when did it become recognized?
So the competition is a foot race, similar to any trail event. The one that's most popular is probably what's referred to as the Spartan Super. So it's an 8-mile course consisting of hilly running, usually off-road, and it has 25 obstacles throughout the course. So we do everything from carrying heavy sandbags to climbing up a rope, traversing something known as a multi-rig, which is rings and bars, monkey bars, and we even have a spear throw during the course. So combining obstacles and racing and running into a single event.
Okay, so it's classified as a sport. When's the sport season? You know, like baseball is from spring to fall, basketball. When is this sport season, and who do you compete against?
There are Spartan races taking place all throughout the year, from January all the way to the end of December. So it's
okay.
The season itself is pretty much all year round, but the more elite side of competition, when the championship races start coming around, that's from about March to October. That's pretty much from the first championship race all the way to the World Championships in Tahoe at the end of the year. And competitors are anywhere from, you know, professional athletes who are making a living doing this, people trying to do it like me. And then there's even, you know, people with regular everyday jobs.
Weekend warriors.
On their own.
Weekend warriors,
exactly, yeah. And they compete with us as well. And some of the best racers in the world are just regular guys doing it for fun. And that's a really cool side of the sport, to see that anybody can be at the top of the sport at any time.
So this is something that other people, not myself, would call fun, because it's pretty intense. It's not exactly in my definition in the dictionary under fun. I understand there, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm so new to this world, but there's the sprint race, or the sprint, which is like 3 miles plus 20 obstacles. And then the super, correct, which I think you were just describing, is 8 miles and 25 obstacles. And then there's the beast, which is 12 miles and 30 obstacles.
That's correct, yeah. And, you know, a beast in the last few years has evolved to be anywhere from 12 to 17 miles. So pretty big difference, but it's a pretty broad category. But, yeah, the beast is definitely one of the top races in the sport. But there are also a couple other events that Spartan does, such as the Ultra Beast, which consists of 2 laps on a beast course. So that can go all the way up to a 30-mile race for those real extreme long-distance kind of guys, yeah.
Wow. And you mentioned briefly some of the obstacles. Can you share a few more so that kind of paint a picture for our listeners so they really get an idea, unless they go to a website, but really get an idea of what it physically looks like?
Some of the mainstay obstacles, really famous parts of Spartan, climbing over walls, up to an 8-foot wall, as low as a 4-foot wall. So there's all spread out throughout the course. The rope climb, which is about, a 15-foot rope. You have to climb up and hit a cowbell at the top to signify you finished. Monkey bars, that's pretty standard. Everyone remembers those from childhood.
Yes.
And then there's a multi-rig where anything from ropes, short ropes, and rings that you have to traverse across to get to the other side. And then we have a sandbag carry, which for the men, it's a 60-pound sandbag, and women, it's a 40-pound sandbag that you carry throughout a course, usually up the side of the hill and back down, and other things along those lines. That's what it's about.
I'm speaking with Vijay Jones. He's a Spartan athlete, and this is part of our segment, Jobs You Don't Always Think About, and this is a job I have never knew about, let alone thought about. So do you race against the clock? Or are you racing against other athletes at the same time?
We race all together. In the elite wave, it'll be about 200 people taking off at the same time. And it's side-by-side, action-packed racing from start to finish. Anywhere from running on the trails to being on the obstacles right next to each other. Yeah, it's an intense racing experience.
And is there a crowd there? Do crowds follow you? Because it's so long, where would they actually be to watch what you're doing?
So a lot of the course designers have taken, spectators into account, because that's where, that's where the sport's made, the people that want to watch. They design it where a lot of the running and the stuff that's not as interesting takes place out on the mountain, and they try to bring the obstacles closer into the venue area where people can watch and observe, the really cool parts of the race that we have. A lot of people will see those obstacles closer into the venue.
When and why did you get involved in the sport?
I got involved back in 2014. At that time, I was still in high school. I was a cross-country and track athlete, and my dad suggested I do this obstacle race, and I tried it, and I fell in love with the sport. It was kind of a perfect balance for me. I was a jack-of-all-trades at the time, and this combining, so many different skills into one sport was perfect for me, and I couldn't get enough. It was awesome.
What do you like about it?
I love everything about it. The versatility of the sport. I love the community in your fellow competitors, which you're racing against and trying to beat each other, but there's a camaraderie there. As soon as you finish, you're all celebrating the race and how everybody did. And that's a really cool part that I enjoy about, the Spartan community. Yeah, I just love racing.
Do men and women compete in the same, or is it women against women and men against men, or how is that set up?
Men and women take off at different times. So the fast men will be far ahead, but the fast women, they start 15 minutes after the men. So a lot of times women will be passing some of the slower guys. And it's referred to as getting chicked in the sport when the women come flying by the guys, because they are definitely fierce competitors. As for scoring, it's all men facing each other and then women facing each other.
Okay. What are the locations? Could you be in maybe the hot summer desert, or are you in cooler climates? What's the geographic setting there?
A lot of races try to take place in, more outdoors areas. So
as opposed to doing this indoors?
Yes, exactly. They try to get out into the woods. So a lot of mountainous venues, big open spaces, parks, stuff like that. But races take place all year round. And I think there's 90 races throughout the year in the U.S. alone.
Wow.
Yeah, every place, every temperature, every climate you could imagine, there's going to be a race there. There's even races in Iceland.
Can you share with me what your workout or training routine might be so that you can stay competitive?
Training is really, I don't get to focus on any one thing too much. I have to make sure that I can, handle anything that's thrown at me. So mixing running anywhere from, 40 to 60 miles of running during the week. Whoa. And combining that with, a few days of gym and strength training to balance out between running and strength training. So that's what it usually consists of.
I'm going to take a leap here, but I'm guessing there's not an ounce of fat on you.
Yeah, not too much. I mean, I struggle to keep up with how many calories I burn during the day. So it's actually kind of a chore for me to have to eat enough to maintain my body weight for the amount of work that we're putting in.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah, totally. can you make a living at this? And what does that living look like?
Yes, so you can make a living doing this. If you're one of the top athletes, prize money is available at all the races, especially at the championship series races. But a lot of it comes from endorsements, from sponsors and people that want to back you in your, you know, racing career. There's a few of us that are doing it right now. I'm kind of making a part living, so I'm still doing it just because I love to do it. Yeah, you can make a living in this sport if you know how to market yourself right and you have the results to back it up. And as media exposure of the sport grows the way it is, there's a lot more viewers in this sport than there were 5 years ago. You know, we were on NBC for a few years broadcasting the Spartan races.
Wow.
And we've been on Facebook Live all year broadcasting a lot and getting a lot of viewers. The media attention is getting there. That means, you know, endorsements for athletes and sponsors will be coming in as well. Yeah, that's where I make my money to be able to keep racing, and that's where a lot of us do.
Prize money, what does that look like? Because it seems to me if you're traveling all over, not just the state, but let's say Iceland or wherever you're going, that takes money to travel, to lodge, to airplanes, to drive, to gas, whatever. Is that coming from your sponsors or is that coming from out of your pocket?
I have kind of a balance of both. The races in the U.S., just the regular races, if you win, you get $500, second is $200, third is $100. But then at championship series races, if you win the race, you get $3,000, and that goes all the way down to 10th place where you get $100. So it's spread out that way. And then at the world championships, you'll get $15,000 for being world champion, and that trickles down, you know, into the top 20 places. And there's different point series throughout the year where you can make money there as well. Winning races, getting on the podium pays for, you know, your next race, your next trip. But I also do have some sponsors. For example, I'm sponsored by a nutrition company called Wilderness Athlete, and they endorse me and help me get to some of my races throughout the year. But it's also balanced with, I have a part-time job. I work at a running shoe store. Yeah, I balance it out and I make it happen so I can make sure I get to all these races throughout the year.
Wow. Very interesting. Have you won a few races in your time?
I have. So I won my first race in 2015, I was 16 years old, and that set the record for the youngest Spartan race winner at the time.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And since then, my results have gotten better and better. And this year, I've raced 15 to 20 times, been pretty busy, and I've only finished off the podium twice.
What does that mean, finished off the podium?
So that means fourth place or worse. So I've been first, second, or third at almost every race I've competed in this year.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. So glad to hear that. So what do you hope to do with the sport? What's your goal?
As of right now, I'm an athlete. I want to compete, and I want to see the sport grow and become elite. And the thing that everybody's talking about right now is Olympics. Everyone wants to see obstacle course racing as a sport go to the Olympics. It seems like we're on a pretty good path. We're on a good trajectory towards that goal. That's ultimately where I'd like to see the sport go. And as of right now, I want to keep competing and be, you know, the best athlete I can be.
Well, very good. My guest has been Vijay Jones. He's a Spartan athlete, and it's part of our segment we're calling Jobs You Don't Always Think About. Vijay, thank you so much, and good luck.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Since this interview, Vijay has competed at the Spartan World Championship in Lake Tahoe. He placed 12th in the men's category. As part of Team USA, he placed second in the Team World Championship. On May 18th and 19th, Vijay will compete in the Big Bear Beast and Sprint Weekend. To learn more about the sport, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyle. That's our show. To hear any past interviews, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wadd, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Ethan Bortnick provides our theme music. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.